Welcome to Global Venturing Review podcast from Global Corporate Venturing, Global University Venturing and Global Government Venturing. My name's James Mawson, founder and editor-in-chief, and with me we have Thierry Hillis.
Yes. Hello, James. It's good to have you back on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a little bit while. You've been editor of Gov and GGV, and there's been quite an exciting bit of news. So we'll jump straight back into it with a couple of sort of people moves, actually, and a couple of commentary pieces that's been done on the sites this week, one of which is that if society is going to produce the next generation of entrepreneurs, then they will have to be nurtured at an early an age with an eye on the future. A piece looking at how entrepreneurs can help out by providing mentorship, but at a deeper level, the younger generation needs space to be creative and come up with the ideas necessary to start a business in the first place. So it looks a little bit at the sort of schooling. But actually, what we found this week is that nurturing the next generation doesn't mean neglecting the current entrepreneurs, just perhaps looking a little wider for the investors and startups than a narrow set of mainly white males, it seems. So Intel Capital, perhaps the largest corporate venturing unit globally, has chosen Christine Herron and Trina Van Pelt to manage its $125 million Intel Capital Diversity Fund, which invests in tech startups led by women and underrepresented in minorities. Intel Capital actually had a very active first half of the year with $308 million invested in new and follow-on deals, and they'll announce a deal for this Intel Capital Diversity Fund next week, actually. But as the co-heads of the fund, Herron and Van Pelt replaced Lisa Lambert, who left in May to become managing partner at Westley Group. What we found interesting about sort of the Intel Capital Fund is it's one of the first specific to try and represent the diversity and look outside of sort of core white males in many sense. Intel itself has a strategic policy to try and have a sort of 50-50 and a much more diverse workforce, which seemed quite sensible. And what we found through the National Venture Capital Association, the US trade body, it issued last week a report called Building a More Inclusive Entrepreneurial Ecosystem, which looked at the lack of underrepresented groups participating in venture capital and entrepreneurship. And it said that Intel Capital's fund, along with one by Jumpstart, were both dedicated to investing in underrepresented minority entrepreneurs. There's also one from Comcast called Dream It, but the NVCA report focused on Intel and Jumpstart. And what if you read the report, it's a very good report, actually. It's definitely worth looking at it. There's some good quotes and sort of support from some of the corporate venturing units. Sue Siegel, CEO at GE Ventures, in the report said, "At GE Ventures, we see diversity and inclusiveness as an essential part of our innovation, creativity, productivity, and competitive advantage. We take pride in being one of the most diverse corporate venture capital teams in the country," end quote. And Claudia Van Munster, Managing Director Emeritus at IBM Venture Capital Group and Venture Advisor of New Enterprise Associates, a VC firm, added, quote, "Corporations have a long history of embracing diversity in their workforce and leadership in order to achieve better business performance, as is clearly reflected in the leadership composition of over 1,000 corporate venture capital groups operating today." This was a reference to research done by Global Corporate Venturing earlier in the year at our GCVI summit, which has just finished this early bird closing for discount prices, by the way. But to carry on with Claudia's quote, "As one of those leaders for the past 15 years, I am a big champion of diversity because I believe driving higher level performance in the innovation ecosystem can yield even greater impact on people's lives." End quote. Johnson & Johnson said in the NVCA report that its commitment was for inclusion and diversity for the JJDC team, its corporate venture units. It currently has more than 30% of investors are female, and more than 30% of investors are ethnically diverse. So this NBC report came out of a task force that it formed at the end of 2014. What it said, it was hoping to actually get more diversity on its report, and it said that its board of directors now is 38% women or underrepresented minority. By contrast, its research found 11% of females and, in effect, 74% of white ethnicity, including some 7% who are white female. So its 38% is a little better than perhaps the sort of, well, perhaps 67% who are sort of white male and 74% who are white female. So they've added a bit more. And this came out of research by Richard Kirby, who's the vice president of VC firm Fenrock in the report, who said that, quote, "The data show the majority of venture capitalists don't have operational experience or an engineering background. Therefore, it is important to focus on what all the successful people listed in the report have in common. They are all intelligent, curious, driven, hardworking, and a slew of other positive superlatives. But most importantly, they were given an opportunity to become an investor and access to capital to make investments. End quote. What in fact Richard's trying to argue is that most VCs don't get a job through anything more than plenty of ability, but not through any operational or sort of engineering backgrounds, nothing particularly special in their sort of education or their startup experience, if they've got any at all. So he's saying that actually it's the opportunity, and then we can find other people who are equally good or better VCs, which I think is an important point to make. But we have seen a number of other movements, which is that Claudia Iannazzo, who's become managing partner and co-founder of a new VC firm called Alpha Prime, which has, according to her, a European bank as a strategic LP in them. She said he was formerly a sort of partner at a corporate-backed firm called Pereg Ventures, which is backed by Nielsen, a TV rating agency. So her new firm is in effect trying to rebalance a little bit the sort of white male-dominated venture landscape. So we wish Claudia every luck, and along with the NVCA, Global Corporate Venturing, is doing a conference in New York City at the end of October, October 28th, where we'll be bringing these corporate LPs to meet the new and emerging and other VCs that want to sort of get them active in their funds. So we wish Claudia all the success. And for those who also want to meet corporate LPs, do come along to that event. A couple of other quick moves. Stephanie Roussel has become managing partner at Solvay Ventures Corporate Venturing Unit. And Troy Williams, who is a sort of head of Macmillan Ventures, a publisher, Corporate Venturing Unit, has become managing director at University Ventures, which is, funny enough, backed by a strategic LP from Bertelsmann. So jump from one ship to the next in that sense. And there's been a couple of other fund moves, but I'll ask Thierry to pick up on those.
Yes, we've had Alexander Rosenfeld, the former president of Shell Technology Ventures, who's launched a VC firm called Climate Impact Capital. And he's targeting a $30 million fund for that. And he's actually looking to find a corporate strategic partner as at least one of the limited partners for that fund.
Alex was formerly at Shell for a few years, and it's been quite interesting, that global emerging landscape. So wish you all the best for that, Alex.
Certainly. It seems like he's off to a good start anyway. And then in China, we have Alibaba, or Alibaba Pictures, its movie subsidiary, which is also getting into corporate venturing, and they're investing $75 million in a $300 million fund that is looking to make forays into the entertainment industry, basically. And they're working in partnership with asset manager Gopher Asset. And similarly, we have Focus Media, a outdoor advertising company that is launching strategic investments. And they're raising four $75 million funds, and each of these will be collaboration with a different investment firm. And that follows a $400 million sports-themed fund that Focus set up in April with Fontanelli's partners. And Focus is putting up half of the capital for each of these new funds. And then we're staying in Asia. It's quite busy over there. My Home Group is launching a $75 million fund to invest over the next 5 years. And they're starting with $15 million, but they're kind of trying and see where that goes and then building the fund out as they go. And then we have Siam Commercial Bank, I think that's how it's pronounced, that's advancing its own corporate venturing plans for... They have quite an odd setup, basically. They have Digital Ventures Unit, which you could call a corporate venturing arm, but then that's subdivided into a specific corporate venturing arm, an accelerator, and a research and development unit that they've started to formalize now. So we might see some interesting investments coming from them in the near future as well. And the next one, pretty sure that's still in Asia. Sega Sammy, the console entertainment company, and Septeni, forgetting what they do now, but they've supported a KK fund. I don't think they've disclosed the size for it yet, but it's going to focus on early stage startups across Southeast Asia, Taiwan, and Hong Kong.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me that in terms of corporates, the main activity of new launches coming out of Asia, you know, sort of the economic growth in the region is still pretty tremendous. Demographics are great. And they're really sort of a wave of corporate entry launches. They've seen success coming out of some large Chinese corporations that have grown and then set up corporate entry units across Southeast Asia and the rest of Asia. There's just a huge appetite to use that the same dynamics where they can. So I think it's fascinating to see when it's not seeing that level of activity. Most of them, main Western and US firms, have already had venture units being set up. There's still a long tail of those that are considering or trying to do that. But in terms of actual activity, Asia's where it all seems to be at. But anything on the university and government side, Thierry?
We have. It's been quite on the university side. Obviously, the academic year is over. But New York University's Tandon School of Engineering has partnered a VC firm called FF Venture Capital. And they're launching an accelerator program aimed at the artificial intelligence sector. And if I remember correctly, I think they're seeking 5 startups from anywhere in the world, basically, to come to New York and do a 4-month AI program and help them get off the ground. And then we have a commercialization firm called SNE, which is based in Israel. And they just got a contract to basically act as a central tech transfer office for universities in the country, and they've just raised $2.5 million in funding, which I don't think was a fund per se, but that's quite a lot of money, so they might put some of that money into spin-outs directly. And then New Zealand has actually been quite active recently. They've joined a $150 million fund in Australia. That's Otago University and Malagan Institute and Callaghan Innovation. And it's a massive fund, which has more than 50 Australian research institutes and hospitals at the moment. And they're basically all joining forces, chipping in together, trying to get research off the ground and then splitting the profits from those ventures. So quite a promising endeavor.
A bit like the French SAT system, I suppose. Isn't
it? Yeah, quite. I think this was initiated by the federal government in Australia. Can't quite remember now. But yeah, it's definitely... definitely quite interesting, and crossing the border as well, which is an interesting move, something that the SATs haven't done yet. Not sure if that's on the cards for them, but France is quite big, so I don't know if they have necessarily a need to go and look abroad. But
and government side, are there any fun launches on that?
We have Taiwan, which has through its National Development Fund has allocated $3.1 billion to investments in domestic companies in order to leverage private sector commitments. And basically what they're trying to do is get the economy away from focusing too much on electronics manufacturing and that kind of stuff, because that's about 50% of their GDP at the moment. And obviously, if people in the West don't have the money to buy laptops, then that has massive repercussions on the sector in Taiwan and kind of drags that country down with them. And in Germany, we have the Ministry of Economic Affairs and Energy and the European Investment Fund that have joined forces to provide an additional $1.1 billion through 2 VC firms.
I think these are fund of funds, effectively. So they'll act as a support to the venture capital firms. They'll distribute it out in Germany and rest of continental Europe. I'll be interested to see if any UK-based firms are able to tap into those pools or whether it all remains in Germany and on the continent, given the uncertainty over Brexit. But certainly it's a lot of money, and it just shows the level of support still there, the appetite from governments to support the venture and corporate and other ecosystems. Global corporate venture and global government venture and university venture, and we're all working together with a number of governments from Brazil, US, Canada, Russia, Singapore, and potentially Japan and other places, in order for them to better understand how to tap into those global entrepreneurial and venture ecosystems. So it's interesting to see Germany really sort of ramping up the needle in terms of what they're committed to.
Very great.
And then thing I've seen, there's one more in Flanders, Jerry.
There is one that's come out of Flanders, the Belgian province state. They have put $33 million in an Internet of Things focused fund that's got a target size of 110 million. They haven't really released much information beyond that. It's operated by IMEC, which is a nanotechnology research organization in the country, but so far details are quite sparse. So I shall update as more emerges.
Okay, well, it's very good. No, it's interesting to see on the continent, you know, what people are trying to do, and there's sort of amazing research coming out of Europe. So very good to see something being done to support that ecosystem there.
And we have pharmaceutical company Astellas, which has formed a joint venture called Digitex Partners with life sciences venture firm MPM Capital in order to invest in digital health technology. And Astellas has actually been an eager corporate venture and capital investor in healthcare, but has generally restricted its activity to pharmaceutical startups so far. It will be interesting to see if any of its peers elect to make a similar move to join hardware producers like Qualcomm and GE by investing more heavily in the area.
On exits, and been an active week, Thierry?
It has indeed. Jabong was set to be in talks for a $1.2 billion acquisition by Amazon less than 2 years ago, which passed me. I think that was just before I joined GCV, probably. The company that is a part of Rocket Internet's global fashion group is now set to be acquired by Flipkart for just $70 million in a bid to stem Global Fashion Group's losses. That actually comes after GFG's valuation has dropped a whopping 67%, which is quite massive. And I think they raised a fund, it might have been last week, GFG raised a $300-something million fund.
Yeah, I mean, they were apparently oversubscribed for this $330 million funding that came in for GFG last week. But the valuation at which they raised the money was a third of what they raised money a year ago. Rob Levine, who's the news editor of Global Corporate Venture, took it as this week's big deal to look at how Rocket Internet's businesses are collectively fundraising in a tough e-commerce environment. I think it's, you know, there was quite a bit of scepticism when Rocket Internet, which is founded by Germany's Samwa brothers, you know, was able to sort of list a couple of its vehicles, and they had these amazing valuations and raised this huge amount of money on the public exchange a year or 18 months ago. And since then, the sort of the valuations have struggled, I think, to maintain that initial momentum. Yeah, but obviously, the portfolio companies still need more money. So, you know, I certainly think public investors will be a little wary on some of these vehicles coming to market. Funnily enough, we'll actually see from the UK potentially a couple come onto market. We have had some successful sort of flotations of sort of listed venture companies. Most recently, Draper Esprit, which was a venture firm based in the UK, which listed in Ireland and had Ireland state support. But a couple of university ones called Imperial Innovations and IP Group have both listed and done well. And I think we could see some flotations from Oxford and Cambridge's commercialization vehicles called OSI and CIC, respectively. They might look to do a public fundraising shortly. They're certainly trying to raise a little bit more money. They've been backed by Google in one instance, in Oxford's case. And CIC, Cambridge's one, was, I think, backed by Arm from memory. Arm's just been sold to SoftBank. So I think we'll see some attempts to use these public markets, but I think this sort of GFG example will be potentially a cautionary tale for some public investors in those. So, but certainly do read Rob's piece for more details on that. So, Thierry, anything else on the exit front? Anything more positive, I think?
Yeah, it's quite depressing there. It took a dark turn. We have, back to China again, we have the Internet Media and Electronics Group, Li Eco, that has grown at quite an astonishing rate over the past 2 years through some large-size investments, that is now looking to expand into the US through a $2 billion acquisition of Vizio, a consumer electronics producer. Vizio is actually competing with some of the world's largest TV manufacturers, but it's made quite some strides by assembling its low-price products in Asia with the help of strategic partners and shareholders, Amtran and Foxconn.
Foxconn are the sort of also known as Honghai, and they make all Apple's sort of iPhones and that sort of
thing. Yeah, quite a massive contract manufacturer.
And I think they might make some $400 million through the sale of Vizio to Li Eco. So and certainly the Chinese group is, you know, there's a huge amount of government support for international expansion and acquisitions you know, for the Chinese companies to become global and use acquisitions where possible. So it'd be interesting the source of funding for Li Eco's purchase on that, but it wouldn't surprise me if state banks are behind if they do need any outside capital. Anything in Europe?
We have Unilever, that is set to exit social marketing platform Olapec in a $130 million acquisition by a company called Monotype. And that's quite a markup. I think they had Olapec raised $21 million in VC funding, including $15 million from a Unilever Ventures-led Series B round in 2015. And I think e-commerce companies Bonobos and Warby Parker, which contributed to a $1 million seed round, are also set to get quite a windfall from that acquisition.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how, you know, I mean, Unilever, obviously a massive Anglo-Dutch, you know, fast-moving consumer goods company. The fact that they've been invested in social marketing platforms such as Olapec, it really, really points the direction of how products are sold. But the fact that some relatively new companies, Bonobos and Warby Parker, which is a glasses retailer, you know, both quite new companies themselves, the fact that they were on in at an early stage to this round just really points to how companies can, you know, capitalize on their own success and look around for others and spot peers in some ways, those that can help themselves. You know, it's a great example of a really strong deal. I think that no one would complain with companies able to give a bit of strategic insights in the way that Olapec presumably was able to give Unilever, Bonobos and Warby Parker, but also great financial returns as well. So real win there, it seems. Anything else that caught your eye?
Yes, we have Platfora, a big data technology producer, which has been acquired by Workday for an undisclosed sum, but Platfora had actually raised $95 million in the last 5 years from backers such as Cisco, Citi, HSBC. As long as that's at least slightly over $95 million, they got a nice return on that.
Yeah, not bad in 5 years as well. So it's a positive area.
Quick exit. And then we've also had Hilo. I think it's pronounced that way.
Halo. Hailing a taxi.
Yeah. That's joined forces with MyTaxi, which is owned by Daimler, and they're trying to form Europe's market leader in app-based taxi ordering.
I think there's one in France, BlaBlaCar, in terms of, you know, ride-sharing rather than necessarily ride-hailing, but I do think they're on an uphill battle if they're going to try and compete with Lyft and Uber, and then obviously Didi Cash in China, that, you know, the sums involved in those sort of Asian and US firms, they've raised billions or tens of billions between them. So I think a sort of merger between MyTaxi and Halo, I think, might be great, but you know, it might just be a sort of merger before an exit to one of the other bigger folks looking to come to Europe, which is perfectly reasonable strategy, I would say. But at the moment, I would say they're not quite in the running. And would have thought Halo actually tried to expand in the US and got a complete kick in by all. So we shall see. We shall see. But actually, I will mention we've been developing a sort of connected car and future transport report. We've been we're working with the Brazilian government on an event in mid-October over there, and they've got an autos day on the 26th of October. So folks who have any insights or thoughts on this sector, please do get in touch. Jerry, anything on the government exit side?
We've had one exit on government, which is a cloud computing company called Talend, which started in France, but now they're based in the US, which has floated on NASDAQ on Friday in a $94.5 million IPO, which is actually more than they thought they were going to raise. They sold shares at $18 a pop, and they set their range at $15 to $17. Quite a nice uptake there. And we'll see whether they can keep it up in... I think Twilio was the first tech IPO this year from Silicon Valley, and their shares, I think, nearly doubled on the first day of trading. So
we'll see how it goes in the next week. It's a good one for the state-backed BPI France. Some other VCs, the back talent as well. So good one to see. And on investments, yeah, obviously you need some positive exits, return a bit of money, and encourage investments. How's it been on some of the more interesting deals you've seen, Jerry?
We have Mitsui, which has invested $101 million in Columbia Asia, which is the Asian branch of US-based care provider Columbia Pacific Management, in a deal that will give it two board seats, which is quite unusual. Columbia Asia raised the cash as it prepares to expand into Africa, with its first clinic on the continent set to open next month.
I think we'll see a lot of this, the so-called south-to-south deals, you know, like particularly companies in that maybe have a US presence, trying to work out how they get the strategic partners to expand into Asia, but then also the Asian firms trying to use this as a hook to then go into Africa. Africa really is a sort of next region of interest for a lot of people. And so just purely from the demographics and economics standpoint, a lot of activity. So I think this Colombia-Asia sort of angle is definitely an interesting one. It really shows the sort of globalization of firms or how they can do it. So be an interesting one to see if it works. Anything else we're on the sort of, let's put out on a large scale?
Yes, we've had Ubitech, which is backed by Anhui USTC iFly Tech. Rolls off the tongue, which has added $100 million to its coffers to boost research and development efforts for its family-friendly robots. Seems to be a sector that hasn't got much corporate backing, but it's quite an interesting one and one that I'm quite intrigued by.
Yeah, I mean, SoftBank, Mayuichi Sohn is really so keen to support the robots. There's a lot coming out of SoftBank on the robots. They acquired a couple of Intel-backed companies a year or two ago on that side. So, and then in the US, there's quite a few interesting robotic companies. So, yeah, interesting one to see on the robots. I think we'll see a lot on that coming down.
Hopefully. And then we have Hero Sports, which is an esports company spun out by a Chinese game publisher called Hero Entertainment in May, which has raised $96 million now in a round led by Focus Media, which has invested $45 million, so nearly half.
Mm.
The platform claims it has 50 million daily active users and some 400 million registered users, which is staggering, and recently signed an agreement that will see it incorporate US-based company Virtuix's VR technology into its gaming centers.
Mm.
Sort of staying with technology, we have UpThere, which is a personal cloud storage service that's launched last week, and that revealed at the same time that it's secured $77 million in a round led by Western Digital, the storage device makers, and venture firm KBCB.
Kleiner Perkins.
Yeah, Coffee and Bios, yeah.
I think they had a bit of extra money coming in from Alphabet, so Google conglomerate and NTT Docomo. Find a bit of money. So, yeah, I mean, cloud storage is a fascinating area. We just did a profile at GCB on Microsoft, and you know, there really is a big three that's formed on a sort of cloud storage platform between Google, Microsoft, and Amazon. Amazon's results were fantastic. And their cloud revenues were up 58% in the past year, and Microsoft's were
I think something like 10 billion.
Yeah, Microsoft's were up a comparable amount as well. So it's the cloud and storage is really a great space. It'll be interesting to see what UpThere does in this piece.
It's kind of interesting to see where the saturation point is as well. Where does the innovation stop? I certainly can't see a difference between Dropbox and Google Drive and those kinds of things from a consumer perspective. But I imagine maybe for enterprise, that's a slightly different story.
Hmm.
And then we had a mobile gaming company, Scopely, which has taken its total funding to just under $100 million in a $55 million Series B, which included game developer Take-Two Interactive. I think Take-Two's previous VC investment was actually in Twitch, the live streaming platform that was acquired by Amazon for nearly $1 billion, I think $970 million in 2014. So they probably have some decent expectations for Scopely, and whether it can live up to that or not.
Yeah, no, it's a great example of sort of recycling of cash. It's taken a couple of years, but obviously identified Scopely, as you say.
Yeah, I think they've signed some contracts with big IP holders like TV show The Walking Dead and producing games that already have a massive fan base available to them. So they are probably worth the money that they just got. And then we have Everfee, the operator of a critical skills and compliance learning platform with more than 14 million users certified, which has raised $40 million in capital from investors such as Advanced Publications. And that's taken their overall funding past $60 million and comes in the wake of an acquisition of compliance learning specialist Law Room last week. So exciting times ahead for them. And then we have Wonder Workshop, the final deal, an Alphabet-backed developer of educational robots that can help teach kids about coding and fundamental computer skills. And Wonder Workshop has just secured $20 million in a Series B, which will help it expand into Asia. We've had Idea Bulb Ventures, the US arm of Chinese venture firm InnovationWorks, which co-led the round and will be able to offer a link to its parent that will assist the startup in its expansion quest.
Funnily enough, it's perhaps not a surprise, Idea Bulb, which came out of InnovationWorks. InnovationWorks was founded by Kai-Fu Lee, who was the original sort of CEO of Google's Chinese search engine operation. He left, and the Chinese effectively shut down sort of Google, so they to open up their system to the state. You know, and he set up InnovationWorks and had tremendous success in Idea Bulbs. I think this must be one of their first deals in a US firm to help them expand into Asia. We really see that sort of cross-cultural collaboration happening, but not surprised to see Alphabet being involved in one of its early deals.
That's it for the corporate side. We've had one interesting, well, we've had a couple of interesting deals on government, but one interesting one that you pointed out is Bijou's, which is producing educational technology products. And they are raising a $50 million funding round with potential involvement from the International Finance Corporation, the private sector lending arm of the World Bank Group, which is exploring a commitment of up to $15 million. In the company, which should give them a decent stake.
Yeah, I think IFC is looking to double its venture portfolio, so no surprise if we'll see them become a lot more active.
And then finally, to close it all off, we have, it's not so much an investment per se, but it's three universities that on Gov we looked back on the academic year, which was Florida, Purdue, and Pittsburgh, which have all broken their own tech transfer records. Some of them for several years running. We've had Purdue has spun out 27 new companies, new spin-outs. Florida has created 17 new spin-outs. And Pittsburgh has launched 13 new spin-outs. So quite some good numbers for those three. And I'm sure we will look at numbers from other universities as well. But it seems to have been quite a productive year for many of them.
Yeah, that's very good to see the real base of the stack activity coming through from the university. Well, Thierry, thank you very much for the sort of highlights. My name's James Mawson. Thanks, Thierry Hellers, for joining us. If you need to get in touch, do contact us at jmawson@morsonia.com and Thierry Hellers, thelles@globalcorporateventure.com. Have a good week. Do keep in touch with the news.
Goodbye.
Global Venturing Review was produced by In Ear Production. You can find out more by going to inearproduction.com.